Hey everyone, this is Elijah K. Johnson with Liberty in Finance. And today we have a special live report. This is live, so you can submit questions for David Morgan here. In the live chat, we have David Morgan from the Silver Guru from the Morgan Report. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Elijah. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And I did want to kind of discuss if, you know, what this year has been for precious metals. It seems like we've had quite a wild ride. I mean, if you just look like a month two months ago, you know, we were at $18 silver. We even went below 18 for a little while here, but now we're at 23 plus, got into the 24s a couple of days ago. What do you make of this wild ride we've seen this year and this dramatic increase we've seen in the last couple of months?
Well, from the year over year perspective, we did basically a round trip. We went from around 22 in January this year up to 26, double top of 26 a couple times, and then came all the way back up to 22. And it's only been in the last few trading sessions where we got to 24, as you mentioned. So there's that part. I think from another perspective, comparing other asset classes, I just did my weekly podcast. You know, crypto or Bitcoin's down 70% and silver is, you know, not off. It's flat to slightly up. So relative to the crypto space, you know, silver's held its own. Gold's in the same situation. I think a couple things, Elijah. One, we used to always get a very good seasonal year-end rally. From the time I started avidly in the silver market in my 20s, almost every year from late November into and usually through January, you would see a rally. And then the last decade or so, several years, I'd say four or so were consecutive. The lowest print for the year was the last trading day. And that's very different than, you know, this rally has happened. So now we're back to the rally mode. Platinum and palladium usually get a rally in January. That's pretty seasonal. That's the highest probability of the seasonalities that I know of. And so I think there's a couple of things going on. You know, it's the physical demand. It's been strong all year, starting to fall off now. The premiums are coming down. But we've had a really strong silver market as far as the retail market's concerned. And the gold market is doing okay, maybe even better than silver from, that doesn't dip as much and it's less volatile. But central banks have been net buyers of gold. And this continues to happen, and it's making, you know, somewhat the mainstream news where the central banks have added to their positions and have the largest holdings they've had since 1975. And my comment on that is that gold is the money of last resorts and gold is the money of the establishment, even though it's not recognized on your mainstream financial channels, but the banks all have it. They have it for a reason. If they need it, they can revalue it and issue, you know, a gold-backed currency if they had to do it. I don't think that's in the cards exactly. Some do think that the next system will be gold-backed. It could be. I certainly don't know. But I do know what their philosophy is, and that is to maintain control the money system. And the best way you can control the money system, if it has perceived value but no real value, that way you can inflate it or make it, you know, whatever amount you want. Gold's a policeman on the currency. If you have a true gold backing, then the gold will prevent you from inflating the currency supply because it's got to have a correspondence to a certain amount of gold. And the gold supply only grows at 1.5% a year. So that means you could have a 1.5% growth in the monetary supply, but that doesn't necessarily mean your GDP would only grow 1.5%. You could have a 5% GDP growth with 1.5% growth in money because as humans, you know, as the human experiences, you get better and better productivity as time goes on. I mean, a quick example for everybody is like an iPhone 2 versus an iPhone 12 or 13, 14, whatever they are now. You know, I mean, there weren't even smartphones up until what, a decade ago or so. So my point being is that you can continue to improve economically at a different rate than the money supply. Problem now, of course, has been we increase the money supply and get a negative return. We have to put out $5 or $6 of funding money to get $1 of growth. You go broke doing that.
No, when it comes to the demand we've been seeing for the metals, we've been, you know, both reporting on this, and you're mentioning the central banks acquiring precious metals. We're also seeing the exchanges being drained. If we look at the registered category on the COMEX, I believe we were just looking at 33 million ounces. So this is even lower than the last time we talked about this. Your perspective on that, and where do you think that's heading?
Hard to say. I mean, I've, you know, looked at this market probably as long as anybody other than maybe Ted Butler. And I've seen it down this low. I've seen it lower than this a couple of times. And in both instances, I was kind of like, oh, man, this is it. You know, there's no registered left. This is going to, you know, the COMEX is going to die, or, you know, whatever. And miraculously, a bunch of silver came in and replenished the stockpile of the dealer's inventory, which is the registered category. This time, I'm not so sure. I wasn't paying as much attention to LBMA back in those days, which I should have, but I didn't. This time, it's both the LBMA and the COMEX, as you said. And I'm not sure. I mean, a trend in motion continues till it actually stops. So the trend is very clear that there's drains going on in the silver supply. And you're seeing metal come off of the SLV. So somebody's wants the physical silver for whatever reason. And, you know, there's a huge arbitrage. When you take a silver brick of 1,000 ounces and you turn it into 10 ounce bars, 100 ounce bars, 1 ounce coins, the retail markup on that silver product that's made out of silver is huge. So, you know, there's a lot of incentive to put out more product that the retail investor wants, and there's a ready market for it. So that could be part of the equation. The rest is industrial demand really hasn't subsided, especially with what's going on in the energy sphere, with Europe being, you know, in dire straits with the amount of energy that they need and the amount they're actually able to produce. So they're dependent on, you know, Russia and alternative means of heat like wood. And that, of course, goes into the alternative energy, which is solar primarily and wind power, as we all know. And of course, that means there's a, you know, a non-ceasing demand for solar at the present time, and that's probably going to increase. So we have a lot of vectors that point to silver for a variety of reasons, and we do see the drainage continuing. I do have to point out that many silver advocates over years and years have said again and again that, you know, there's this much silver that's in the delivery month, and there's this many contracts for the delivery month, and presto change-o, it's going to happen this month. And it never does. And the reason it doesn't is because most of those contracts are professionals, and they do what's called a rollover. So they roll over from the delivery month of December into the next delivery month, which is March. And there's advocates that, you know, have a pretty good reputation, but they get it wrong. And I'm not saying it couldn't happen. In theory, it could happen. The other thing is they get excited about when you get past first notice day and you get into the final delivery day. And I have from personal experience, because I have taken metal off exchange. And not a lot of these people that comment on it haven't really done what I've done in the industry. And I got kind of behind the eight ball one time, Elijah, and I had not closed out my contract. It was past final notice day, and I was kind of sweating it. I've had the money to take it if I needed to. But my broker said, oh, no. He's very casual. He said, nah, don't worry about it. He goes, we could still, you know, fix it by you buying the contract. Don't worry about it. And I did. But it kind of gave me a lesson in real life, the real exchange, how it really works. And I'm not saying it happens in all cases, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that most people aren't aware of. And very little of that metal is delivered versus the amount of paper that is pushed back and forth every day. You got to remember that during the trading day, there might be a big trading house that's in and out of the market 10 times. They might be long 3 times and short 7 times during the same day. I mean, it's a big casino. If the algorithms work for you, you're making money almost every day. But we look at, you know, the commitment of traders, and it's important. You get kind of a big picture view doing that. Looking at the warehouse inventories is important. You get another good clue of what's going on in the physical silver market, which is key. But nonetheless, there are subtleties that I say some of the market participants overreact to and make too much of a big deal about.
We have a viewer's question here about kind of the COMEX inventories and also the price of silver, how it's rising right now after this low. They ask, could a bank just drain the COMEX at a low spot price? And then when COMEX has a low inventory and the spot price goes up a bit, as we've already seen, then sell it back to the COMEX and then kind of profit from that and rinse and repeat. Your perspective on that?
Oh, yeah. Can be done all the time. I mean, silver was in a flat mode for 20 years. I mean, from basically 1981 until 2003, silver just hovered around $5 an ounce, and you can make really good money by what's called selling puts. You can look it up on the internet what selling a put means, but basically you're just betting that silver is going to stay at $5, but maybe not move up. So yeah, there's lots of ways to do it. Most of the time, for the questioner, it's done synthetically. It's done with paper. But yes, you could do it physically, you bet.
Now, I did want to get your perspective kind of going into the end of the year here and looking to 2023. We are seeing the Fed move slightly from its hawkish stance. It seems like, you know, they're slowing the rate hikes. We just got a couple of days ago news that the Fed, you know, is going to has raised rates half a point instead of, you know, the 0.75 it had been raising in the recent past year. So do you think that's a pivot, and how do you think that is going to impact metals in 2023?
I don't think it's going to have a large effect. It does always have an effect when it's announced, sort of a knee-jerk reaction, and people, you know, make a big fuss about it, and it gets in the financial press for about 3 days, and then it's ignored until the next time they raise or don't raise. They're in a bind. I don't think they can stop raising rates until they put in a new system. They may pivot. Powell's been pretty adamant that they haven't even thought about changing the inflation 2% mark that they continually talk about. He may change that to 4% in the next half year. Next, you know, maybe by June of 2023, they'll say, well, continue to raise rates, and now we're up to, you know, 5.5%. And inflation's has come down to 6%, and we're targeting 4 now instead of 2. And once we achieve that, then, you know, they may pivot. But I think a pivot is going to send a message to the markets that the Federal Reserve is giving up on making the dollar worth anything. And it really signals to the market the dollar's worthless, because that's a point where they just keep printing even more. We've printed so much already, and it's an exponential function. So we're at a point where at some place in time, the markets say, this is just funny money. It's not really going to be worth anything. I'm getting out of it. I'm going to buy, you know, lumber, coal, wheat, whatever I can get for these dollars, because I don't trust them anymore. They're not going to be worth very much in the near future. Haven't reached that point yet. Dollar is coveted right now. It's needed by our foreign trading partners. They are very much in need of dollars, and that will continue until it doesn't. So it's a complex system, but it isn't so complex that the basics don't apply. And when you have too much of something, it's less valuable. Right now, the reason we don't have too many dollars, although we printed so much, is because the trading partners needed to settle their debts, and they are in insolvent in a lot of cases. So in order to remain in business, they have to borrow more money. So what they do is they print up their currency, Swiss francs, for example, and send it over to a swap line with the Federal Reserve and get dollars for it to solve their dollar problem. But it's all a big shell game back and forth, and we're getting near the end of it. You know, at some point, the street vendor that has the shell game going on has, I guess, the end of the day, he packs up his works, he moves on. And that's a metaphor for where we're headed. Some point, the banks are going to have to move into a different realm. And I don't think they're really totally prepared for that. Even though you hear the WEF and all these others in the banking elite talk about, you know, the Great Reset, and you'll own nothing and be happy. And, you know, you'll have a central bank digital currency, and humans can be hacked, and all this stuff that's out there. But just because they have the ability to envision this and in some cases implement it at a small scale, It's a much different animal when you get it to a large scale. So unfortunately, the kind of the worst case is you have a collapse and the banks collapse along with the whole thing. And they may be wanting that or planning that. But if that happens, then the rebuild is extremely difficult, although they may have be egotistical enough or brazen enough to think that, oh, well, if we take down all the banks, close them on a Sunday afternoon and reopen them a week later, get everybody into the UBI, Universal Basic Income, and digital dollars or Fed coins, you know, and push the button and everything's reset, and life is good again for us elitists, that may be what they're thinking, but I don't think it'd be implemented nearly in that scenario like I outlined. I think it'd be much more difficult.
It does seem like there is a movement towards a new system. Obviously, we're seeing the digital dollar, and we've touched on that. How do you see precious metals performing in this kind of environment if the Fed does kind of, as you mentioned, give up on trying to protect the value of the dollar?
I think it'll skyrocket. I mean, if you look at monetary history, the precious metals are most reactionary when the governments are really going out of business, when the governments or the currency and or both together are failing. That's when you see the precious metals make these huge moves. And they're sporadic. It doesn't happen often. Not the kind of move I'm thinking of. And it has to be geared to the actual physical economy and the financial system being basically untrusted. And that's going to happen, in my view. I've been saying it for years. And, you know, my timing hasn't been perfect. No one knows exactly. But I do know history, and it tends to repeat. And the problem is, this time it's a global phenomenon because the dollar is the world currency. So if the dollar fails, then there is the ability to see gold priced in dollars into the stratosphere. I mean, if you look at it as a thought experiment, Elijah, and you say, well, all right, gold accounts for all the misallocation of capital has taken place throughout the financial system for the last 20 years. And so if you take the amount of gold that reportedly we have and the base money supply and divide those numbers, and you come up with $20,000 gold. So gold goes to 20,000 as a thought experiment. Would you trade an ounce of gold for 20,000 in fiat? And that's the real question, because if you take the 20,000 in fiat, you better be able to spend it rather quickly, because it might be 30,000 a week later if you're in a true exponential function, which we are. So, you know, getting out will be interesting. And maybe it won't do that. I'm just doing an experiment here in my head. But what we need to think about is, when you get to an overvaluation of gold, what do you want to do with it? And I would pay direct. And with some of the cryptocurrencies that are backed by gold, or, you know, you can still contract in this country. I mean, I could buy an apartment complex with gold. I could buy land with gold. I could buy an automobile with silver. I mean, you could still contract in this country, and you can do it in really all the 50 states. We have 13 states in the union that have already enacted legislation that makes it certainty that you can transact in precious metals. So I think that's what may take place. That's what you see happened in the Weimar Republic, for example. You see where, you know, a hotel was bought for a few gold coins and that type of thing. These are rare events, but we're getting into that rare event. And I do think it's not very far off.
Now, as we look kind of towards the more near term, and we look into next year for 2023, what is your forecast for both gold and silver?
Yeah, it's been a tough one. I mean, I like to be right. I don't like to be over enthusiastic. I mean, I've read all the banks, you know, what the bankers have said. I mean, well, the bankers are saying silver is going to be like 1760 for the year. I think that's absolute, complete, and total hogwash. And then you've got a couple that actually, one says $50 in, it's only one, $50 in 2023. You know, my take is 30. I mean, I want to see silver get over 30 and stay there. And once we do that, there's very little overhead resistance. So everybody that's bought silver at 30 or lower will be in a profit zone. So they'll hold, they will not sell. Some will, but most will hold, which means any new buying pressure will take it to 33. And that's the real mark. And I know 33 is the magic number. I'm not one of those people. But 33, 34, somewhere in there, move above that, and we could get to 50 pretty quickly. So I'm looking for a better year. I'm looking for a really great one. Gold, I'd like to see, you know, I think we hit 2,000 in gold this year, if I remember right. And I think we'll get above 2,000 in gold. I don't expect a lot more out of gold than maybe 2,200. I'm looking at the chart now on Kitco. Yeah, we got over 2,000 in early March of this year in gold. I don't know. This chart's not real clear. I guess it got up to 2060 or so, 2060. So I think you'll see gold make a new nominal high next year. So 21, 22, it's kind of all I'm expecting. But, you know, I have to give the caveat, Elijah, and people get tired of me saying it, but if there's a really big black swan, you know, game's over. Because once you get that tipping point where the run to gold begins and the stampede really takes off, you just don't want to be trampled. You want to have your gold in hand. You want to be early, not late.
I think that's so key. And again, one of the reasons to hold precious metals, probably the main reason, is for insurance. And you definitely want to have insurance before any of those, you know, terrible events happen. So it's, you know, we can have this forecast for precious metals, and that's only if, you know, next year is a relatively calm year. And I mean, if you look at the last couple of years, we definitely haven't had calm times recently. But I did want to get to another viewer's question here. We do have one, and it's about kind of how we talk about, you know, precious metals and as insurance. And I know a lot of people, especially in the Eastern world, understand that, and they have understood precious metals a lot more than elsewhere. But this viewer question is wanting to know, is there an arbitrage between the Western exchanges and the East right now?
That's a tough one. Yes, there is, because I'm connected to most aspects of the market. So like when you go through the smelting and, you know, there's a discount there. And yeah, there's a little bit of that that goes on between the market in India and the rest of the world. And there's some tariffs that are involved. And then if you look at what happens in some of the European markets, there's a value added tax, sometimes as high as 17%. So when you have those kind of add-ons, there are ways to play with it. Is it official? No, it's not. But is it in reality? Yes, it is. I hope that answers the question.
One last viewer question is, are you bullish on any of the junior miners right now?
Well, one that I've been real bullish on went up 57% today. It had an announcement, about a month ago, maybe a little less, and it had grades that were just astronomical. It's headed by one of the best mining teams that I know of. And so one of my members said, man, this stock went up 57% today. Can you do an update? And of course, I will. So that's one, but I won't name it because I reserve that. You know, people pay me for my insights. But Summa Silver went up, I think, 24% today. So some of these juniors are reacting for whatever reason. You know, maybe somebody saw my video on this particular one I just mentioned that went up 57%. I made a video for my members only and talked about how undervalued it is. One of my members said, you know, you've had this stock for so long and hasn't done anything, and I'm, you know, kind of tired of, you know, why would you hold this stock? And so I explained to him that these penny stocks are like a long-term call option as long as you pick the right ones. And that regular option, you have a time decay. So you buy it and it has value until the time runs out, and then you got to buy another one. So it actually drains your capital unless you're very good at timing it. Whereas with the right junior, and I say right junior or juniors, and I don't get them all right, so let me say that on the record, you can just wait. And this is a particular case where, you know, it did a lot better than a treasury bill in one day. Now, it's going to hold on to the gains or not, I don't know. I actually haven't had time to look at, other than the chart, what happened. I will call management. I'll probably do an update. Most of my updates lately have been where I get the management of the company to do a video with me, and I put it behind the paywall so that my members get to see it basically firsthand. And I used to give him a few softballs, but I throw a few hardballs at him as well. And it gives my viewers and my members maybe a better appreciation for not only the level of commitment that I have for them, but also more insight than rather than me saying it secondhand, they hear it directly. So I think that's a pretty good service. If I do say so myself.
And I think with the junior minors, it's really important to, you know the team. Do they have a record of success as well? The members of the team there, because, you know, it's junior minors can be explosive in their values, and some of them can fall to zero as well, right?
Yeah, there's a lot. Most of them go to zero. That's the problem. But in a hot market, when everybody wants into gold and silver, even the dogs will fly, pigs will fly. I mean, and that's the way the markets work. I mean, I'm not against it really. I mean, morally, I might be a little perturbed, but it's the way markets work. And that's true of anything, the tech sector. I mean, dogs fly, crypto. Look, I mean, there's these things that have absolutely zero intrinsic value, but people say they are because they have a cute name and the price goes up. Just because the price goes up doesn't mean the value is there. So that's kind of the world we're in, especially at the end of the great inflations. You see all kinds of misallocation of capital. You see people really wanting to get rich quick. You see all kinds of schemes and fads and Ponzi schemes and all kinds of things that take place. And that's just another indicator for my fundamental view that what I said is accurate, that we are a place that happens very rarely, and there'll be an explosion in the paper price of the metals to make up for all of the shenanigans that have gone on throughout the financial sector for a long time. I'll just say, the last 20 years, you could say from the time the gold window was closed, but we were really doing shenanigans. And that's why the gold window was closed, because we were making up more Federal Reserve notes than it was gold to back it up. And France called our bluff along with the UK. So
we'll have to leave it with that, David. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time tonight. Before I let you go, where can our viewers find you if they're interested in learning more?
They could go to my Twitter feed at SilverGuru22 and then go to themorganreport.com, sign up for the free information. If you're interested in the discount I have for the paid service, if you go to silver123.net, that's silver123.net. You can see the discount I'm giving till the end of the year. And back to the Twitter feed, I would look at the last couple of days. I put up a couple of very interesting video clips, one from 1981, the movie Rollover, which is pretty much the scenario I've talked about on this program tonight. And there's one I put up a day after that that goes into a recent movie that talks about what happens if one of the bigger trading partners of the U.S. does not a cyber attack, just does financial warfare and starts selling treasury bills, and they sell them all, what that would do to the market. And both those things are possibilities.
All right. Well, David Morgan, the Silver Guru, once again, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insights, and have a great weekend, and God bless.
God bless you as well. Thank you, Elijah.